if I do need to focus for 2 months on someone's project and not create income, that I can do that, that I have the space and headspace to do that. And this place gives that to you.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. So here you just take a breather, chill with us, and you're going to have a very, very well arranged break from business. So here we're not going to talk about how to grow your business, lead generation, choosing a partner. We're going to talk about the other things that are important to entrepreneurs and probably things that you have thought about, things you've always wanted to ask your fellow entrepreneurs. And here, this is the space for that. So if you have checked out our past episodes, we talked about dating, travel, nutrition, discipline, other stuff, reading books. Today is an equally interesting episode because I am sitting with someone who lives in my city. So his name is Max Royale. He is joining with us today. He's a music producer, a DJ, and an entrepreneur in the digital marketing space. He is also a sought-after consultant for startups, and he has lived in 11 countries so far. So probably in different cities, more than that. He's going to tell his story. Before now, he is living in Playa del Carmen, Mexico, where I also live. And today we're going to talk about why we love living here. And basically, we're probably going to try to convince you to move here so we can have more cool friends in the area. Welcome, Max. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm honored to be a part of this. I appreciate you. I have a lot of respect for you and what you're doing with this podcast. So I'm feel honored to be on. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. So yeah, let's start with your story. Where did you grow up and how was your journey traveling to so many different places and choosing where to live?
Sure. I grew up in California in the San Francisco Bay Area, kind of in amongst the hustle culture of the Bay and the, I guess you would call it like California dream, you know, with sunshine, openness, progressive politics, things like that. And so that's kind of my background. And then the second part of your question is like what's my story? Like, where did I grow up from? Right. So that's basically, so I grew up in the Bay, from the Bay. I basically grew up kind of there through my old teen years. And then once I, kind of hit 20, I basically was off, caught my first flight overseas. I lived in England and moved to England for a year. I was really into music, into bands. I played in bands in England. I was, believe it or not, in my younger years, this is 30 years ago now. I was a rapper. I went around and I was in England. I was signed to a label called Acid Jazz. And I worked with a lot of different artists, out there. And then, came back to the States, started to the Bay Area, started a band, learned about music production, got into that. At the same time, I was, because this is post, probably the boom in 2000. So I got involved with a lot of my friends got involved with startups. From there, I just kind of balanced the line between music and working with startups. I would help companies raise money. I did that for one of my companies and I got really good at it, even though the company failed. And so I ended up working for investment banks, helping them, in venture capital, helping them find and source out companies to help raise money for. So I've seen a lot of companies. I know a lot about that. But that's not what this podcast is about. It's about living the dream and living your best life, right? So I love what, you know, being a, what the digital age and being an entrepreneur has brought to location independent entrepreneurs. And I, since 2018, I've been a full-time music producer and I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was like Steve Jobs who said that some of the best entrepreneurs also have some sort of an artistic, like, you know, a side to them. And even the oldest like inventors somehow would have like paint on the side. They would also like, you know, play a certain instrument. And it is because a lot of artists are really resourceful and creative and think out of the box. So I can definitely see the connection where you're like being a DJ, a rapper, a musician comes into play as you're helping these startups become more resourceful, you know, connect them to the right people. It's the skills definitely transfer. So how did you end up in Playa del Carmen, Mexico?
Well, I'm like what you call like a COVID baby. And so, you know, like I was in the States. It was like June. So when the pandemic hit, I was staying in Las Vegas, and I was working on a project there, and the project was canceled, but I kind of liked Las Vegas a lot. And that's you were in Las Vegas probably around the same time. Yeah. So small world. So I didn't want to go back to the Bay Area because California, I didn't want to go to the state California because it was shut down totally. And I was like, and you know, you can still at least walk around like Red Rocks and stuff. And yeah, I can go on hikes because I love walking and hiking and, you know, that kind of whole kind of deep work philosophy of, you know, walking meditation. And Vegas is great for that. And then also, you know, and so while I was there, but then I just got, you know, I was like, you know, I got the travel bug, and it was so interesting because at the time they didn't like, basically everybody thought Mexico was shut down, and it was at the border, but nobody was talking about it. You could just fly in and people were like, you can't do that. And you hear this kind of weird news, you know, like fake news and like what's going on. It was just a crazy time. And and I guess thank God for social media, because a few people were posting, and I just went online and booked a ticket and left basically like 2 days later. And I was just going to come for a couple months, or just to get away and kind of figure it out. But I just fell in love with Playa. Playa is such an amazing place here. It's, you know, definitely you have the ability to location hack as far as like, you know, pricing and such, you know, you can, and then, you know, has good internet, has all the things that you kind of check the boxes.
Right.
And I'm one of these people, and I work with my coach on this a lot. I have a coach who works with my personality and my temperament, like more of like a mental mindfulness coach. And I want to be near something beautiful, but I don't actually really want to go there. Like the ocean here is like probably the most spectacular beach in the planet, but but there's too much sand, and you know, now you got to put on sunscreen, so it's kind of a pain in the butt. And anyway, I'm just being silly at this point, but like I love it here. It's gorgeous, and the cenote is a jungle. And the fact that I just moved in yesterday to a 3-bedroom apartment, three-bedroom house, like a full standalone home in a private community here, gated, secure, with a cenote, you know, tennis courts, basketball court, everything, $1,400 a month US, fully furnished with nice furnishings, you know, like these two things came with it. And it's just beautiful. And I love it here. And, you know, the same place, I remember I was living in the Bay Area, and I was paying, you know, $2,800 a month for like a, you know, they call it a 2-bedroom, but it was like a 1-bedroom, and they, you know, turned a large walk-in closet to another bedroom, basically. So to me, I just didn't want to struggle having to try to make ends meet. It's a lot, you know, I came here, and that's kind of why I travel as well, because I found out that you can travel for less than just, this is what I think a misnomer, and I'm just going to kind of ramble on, and I'll let your editor edit this out. But like, as you know, like it's really a lot cheaper to travel internationally than it is to live in a city like New York or Los Angeles or San Francisco. It is because you're not buying stuff. You're not you're not going to go out to Best Buy and plop down $1,500 on a flat screen, right? So you're not going to go, oh, look, there's some shoes in the window. You're not going to carry around three pairs of shoes you know, when you travel, or maybe you will, but I'm not going to. So the thing is, if you learn how to be minimal, that was really important to me. And then you travel and then you just kind of stay as long as you feel right in a place, you know? And so for here, this place just felt right. Probably the first time it's ever felt any place I've ever been for an extended period that felt absolutely right for me. And so, and that's why I'm here. I just fell in love with it.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. We had a very, very similar alignment because I was also living in Las Vegas before moving here. I didn't know that you, it was the same thing for you. And I also moved here during COVID. And wow, that's a really great change. Obviously, paying $1,400 a month for a nice 3-bedroom, fully furnished, gated community. It's super secure with a lot of amenities. That's definitely a deal. When I was in Vegas, I was paying, I think my first house, I was paying $1,650 for a 2-bedroom, also with amazing amenities. It was 20 minutes from the strip. And it was a small 2-bedroom and it was super nice, but it was also kind of it was a little far from everything, but I like that it was kind of peaceful, and in America, everyone drives. So, you know, that definitely one of the things I like about Playa living in Central. Yeah. You just walk everywhere.
I love walking. I love being a part. It's a community. Yeah. It's kind of a bedroom community. I think we joke, like, it's a bedroom community here, but it has like a Walmart. So it's like, you know what I mean? So it's not like you can walk there and it's all right here. It's all central. It's like, you know, if you want to go get some amazing food and spend $5 to get it, like you can literally walk out 20 minutes or, you know, walk out 5 to 10 minutes from your home, no matter where you are in this town, and just go do it. If you want to just go sit at the beach and read a book and, you know, hang out for the day, you can do that too. If you want to go do like entrepreneur events or something like that, you know, startups, and you can meet with people for coffee. The thing about having, I think what a lot of people in the grind or the hustle culture don't quite understand is that because they're so in it, is that you have the opportunity because your expenses are controlled. It's really hard to spend a lot of money here. Right. So unless you're always out eating out and just like totally lavishing, but that's not who you are. So what that does is it takes a little bit of pressure of trying to you can lower that, you know, that monthly nut, as they say, and you can really, what that buys you is something that we never think about, which is freedom to think, to have peace of mind. And I believe that you can't really process who you are until you have distance from what you're doing. So the only way for me to like be in the moment, to be present, is to take a step back. And if you're constantly in the grind or having to live in a way where it's where you have responsibilities and obligations, it's just very difficult to really kind of realize who you are. You'll just get like hints of who you are.
Right.
And of course, you know, it doesn't mean don't take care of your family or do the things that you have to do. It's just, it takes a while to do that. And for me to become totally independent and out of the grind, it took me about 18 months of like just focus of saving and doing all of that to get there. And then from that point on, I never looked back. That was like 2018. And I traveled around the world for a year, and that was amazing. So,
Yeah, absolutely. I like what you shared about changing your environment to come back to who you are.
Yeah.
I think, you know, moving in places where life is simpler, for me, it sounds like a small thing, but when I was in the States, when I was living in the States, I felt the pressure to have to wear makeup and heels every day. And that's just
be a boss, right?
Yeah.
Like be a boss. As a woman, as a business owner for you, some of my best friends, I really, especially women who are entrepreneurs and business owners, like it's such a, the job is just is ridiculous of what you have to pull off, and there's all these social pressures and everything. So I could totally sympathize, and just having been able to take that step back, right? You know, actually, I've known you for a little while. I actually think you're becoming softer, and you know, and like you know, I'm really so. I mean that as a compliment, you know, obviously.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so I you know subtly, and that's great. And I think Playa, I've seen that happen to many people here in Playa, where they move here and they just. The mask or the facade or the you know hanging on so tight, it's like your grip just loosens, you know, and having being in a place like this, and that is just you know, life is one of those things where it's not like a, you know, you can't hold on to it all the time. You got to let life just kind of like a bird in a hand, I guess, just let it land and sit, right? And hold space for your own life. And that's tough when you're always, you know, grinding it out.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things that I like here, because the life is like simpler. It is more, there's, because of how different people are, there's no rules, you know. Everyone here moved here from somewhere else. And because of that, there's no like rules that you don't have to be a certain something. Right. And so it gives you space to be who you are and just relax. And even my friends now keep telling me, like, my God, your skin is amazing and your hair. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm not pressured to wear makeup. I don't, literally and figuratively, I don't have to put on a face. And and I've started to also develop really good attitudes around boundaries and you know, self-awareness and all that, and Playa is great for that. But can you summarize, and I'll try to differentiate my version, three of the top three things you like about Playa del Carmen?
So the people, for sure. The people here. I'm a big people person. You actually mentioned something that was really interesting, which was that everyone that came here came from somewhere else. And it's actually the locals too. So Playa del Carmen and this whole area, Riviera Maya. So when you go to a country or you go to a place, usually there's like, it's like ingrained families, you know, there's like 20. When I was in Prague, I remember I rented an apartment in Prague and like, it was, you know, the family next door was like, has lived there like for eight generations, like since, you know, 1802 or something, you know, these.
Dynasty.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, exactly. So it's like they've been in these long things. So you could just tell like there's dynamics there that people don't get a chance. So I feel like here, it's almost like I could think like when the founding fathers of like the US or whatever, like went across and, you know, on the boats and you know, like people traveled to get away from their, you know, oppression. I could feel that like people came here with a new, and I with a, like a new, with an opportunistic outlook on life. And I think this place, you see it with people and like, it's just like they're breathing fresh air for the first time in their lives. It's really what it feels like. It feels like, oh, I can't believe this. You know what I'm talking about. When people come here, sometimes they can't take it. It's like very strange. And so that's actually why I think a big part of why I fell in love with this place was the people, for sure. You know, you meet people and everyone's up for a conversation, you know, in the US and San Francisco, you know, I mean, people are nice. I will say this. I used to think people were not very nice in the States, but now that I've been here and traveled a bit, I do think that people are generally nice. I just don't think they have the time or the emotional energy to engage.
That's a good nuance.
As much as I would like to engage with people, you know, I get my energy from people. So people, you know, here, and I get my energy from giving. So I'm a big giver as far as like contributing to society and community is a big part of my life. And so that's the number one. The number two, obviously, is the music. I'm a DJ and a music producer. I work with a lot of electronic artists. And so this place is blowing up right now. So I get to go to parties. I don't do drugs or drink. So I get to go to parties and like, I get to like hang out for 2 hours at like 1 a.m. to like 3 or 4 a.m, but take a nap before. And I go home and I take a 4 hour nap and I wake up at, you know, I usually wake up at 4 or 5 a.m. anyway, just because I'm a morning person. But I get to have this, that kind of community, because there's so much of it. When you're living in a city and there's not that much of it, people kind of get geared up and figuratively and literally. You know, and it's like a big thing for here. I can just go out any night of the week and go see a good DJ for, you know, a small crowd, you know, and I get to, you know, the people are really open. They love music here. So I love that. And then the food, the Thailand and Mexico are probably the two best places for food in the world.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Thailand definitely is up there in terms of food.
Yeah.
And Mexico as a country is also great. And in Playa, because of all the people coming from everywhere, they bring their like food from their countries.
Yeah. Totally.
And because they can't find it here. It's the same thing as me. It's like, I'm Filipina. I can't find Filipino food here. So I end up cooking like almost every day. And I actually have grown to appreciate our cuisine more. So that's kind of ironic. That's a great list. So like people, music.
Go ahead. What was that?
What? Sorry.
Sorry, I interrupted you. So there's people that we meet that we both know, like mutual friends, that have people that cook for them. Like they'll have like a hire someone to come on right. and cook, prep their food once a week or twice a week or something like that. And they teach them how to cook their home cuisine. Do you have anybody, do you have someone cook for you or do you love cooking though, right? So you do all your own cooking.
I cook it myself, but I have someone who helps me slice, chop and clean up after. So I only do the fun part.
Oh my God. Is that someone you hire or is that like or is it like your partner or something?
No, it's, I wish it was my partner, but no, he's my QA. He's my QA person, there you go, right. But, no, it's my housekeeper. And, honestly, this is weird, but I still feel like I shouldn't share my recipes or something like that. Oh.
Because your mom taught you, huh? Or your family taught you? Is that why?
Yeah, my mom and YouTube University. I have a degree in University YouTube. Of YouTube. So there's that.
For sure.
But actually, my boyfriend told me like, you know, why don't you like these spring rolls? Like I always cook them. Mm-hmm. My friends always want them, and he was like, why don't you make a big batch like with our housekeeper and like sell it like frozen? Just because mm-hmm. I also like my friends to try like Filipino food, like sharing our culture and all that. So it's definitely like a journey. I would say for me, my top three favorite things about Playa is number one is definitely the quality of living. Mm-hmm. Obviously if you're moving from places like America, Canada, UK, where it's more expensive or like the cost of living is higher, I would say, because expensive is relative. Cost of living is higher, and then you move here, you will end up, I would say, you will end up probably spending the same amount of money in terms of cost of living, but for the same budget, your quality of living increases. So now you have a housekeeper, a doorman, and can have a masseuse that comes to your house every week for the same budget, for sure. Right?
Absolutely.
And then maybe hire a personal trainer, right? Like, so these things, you know, it definitely increases your quality of life. I would say number two is the diverse entrepreneurial community, because I have met so many people here who are just in different businesses, and I always learn something from them. I remember this moment where I have a friend and he's a single guy and he loves dating in Playa del Carmen. So many young people here, you know, they're dating, the apps are on fire. And and he said he went out with this girl and her job was a gut coach. And she teaches people how to improve their gut health and at the same time, like help them like trust their gut more. It's kind of a weird, kind of a really weird business to be in, but I learned a lot from what she does. And I just keep learning from different people here where there are different ways to make money and ways to make a living.
Yeah.
And there's always something to learn. And then lastly, I would say is how fresh the food is.
Yeah,
it's easy to get hormone-free organic meat, vegetables. And because of that, you just naturally are in a better mood, you know, and your health is way better compared to, you know, living in the States, I guess.
No, for sure. And the fresh seafood and you know, it's all, I mean, it's just, and they use a lot of like picante, like hot sauce, like everything's spicy. Yeah. So there's something about that and exactly the food I love. You mentioned something I actually love to talk about is the standard of living, right? So, or the quality of life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you absolutely mentioned it. Like I've met so many different people here that are doing like things that you just couldn't get away with in the States because they've been able to lower their expenses and minimalize their life a little bit. So they're doing stuff like, you know, they're maybe getting into coaching or they're being able to like take 6 months to a year to like really put energy into their passion and you know, or whatever, and it could be anything. And so I think I met somebody who's like a you know, they do like they want to create like children's books for special needs kids. Like, I mean, that's like a, you know, that's to me, I mean, Yes, you could do that, but those are usually like reserved for people, wealthy people, maybe wealthy, you know, housewives or something in the States where they got all this stuff. You need time to explore that community to be able to do that. And how she makes her money is that she teaches online for 4 hours a day, and then she spends another 4 hours working on these books and these tools and these games for these special needs kids. And I thought that was amazing that she did it. And she told me because her rent is $300 a month, you know, and right. Like she does, you know, and so even if you're from someplace inexpensive in the States, like, you know, you're not going to get paid, you know, you're just not. So the fact is, you know, enough to like extend your, you know how the States are, like if you make a $150,000 job, it's kind of funny how your expenses become $155,000 a year. Right. And it's just something about, it's like, you know, scope creep or whatever with your finances.
Right. Lifestyle inflation. Here,
yeah, exactly. So here, unless you do what you're doing, which is not even outrageous, by the way, it's not like you have like a full, you know, you flew a British butler in to like work for you or something. You know what I mean? It's like, you just have a housekeeper. Housekeepers are, you know, $20 to $40 every time you use them. So they come in, we pay $25 for two and a half hours work for our house here twice a week. Mm-hmm. You know, she's great. Rosina, my fiance, has used her for, you know, known her for 7 years, and her friends and the kids come mm-hmm. over. And, you know, if we ever need to watch the kids, we, you know, she watches the kids, you know, it's like, it's just the way it works here is in that community. And you can do that. You can have a housekeeper, and actually it's part of the eco, like almost like the communal ecosystem here to right. do things like that, you know? And it doesn't, you know, and there it's like, if you have a housekeeper, it's just non-existent, you know? So in the States,
you have to be like super rich to have a housekeeper.
Yeah. You have to be super rich because you can't really, I mean, there's a lot of laws behind it, but also you can't, you know, I mean, you can't even hire a housekeeper. You can't even hire anybody in the States without having like filling out W-2, doing all these kind of things, or you use a temp agency or somebody like that. And then you're paying double of what it is. So it's just, for most people, it's just out of keep. So having that opportportunity, and then again, all these things just buy you time. You know, they just buy you time to
headspace,
to get space, to be able to like process and figure things out. If we're smart enough, which I'm not always smart enough, I try not to, you know, I try to, before I jump into something with free time, if I'm able to systemize or create free time for myself, I try not to jump into something new right away. I try to let it breathe for a bit and then become conscious of that space. And then from that space, I can really kind of decide which direction I wanted to take with that. And usually, hopefully, it's aligned with my vision and goals in the first place. But having those things like minimize, it's still, I mean, that alone was like 50% of our lives. If you just move here and you don't even need that much money. If you learn a skill where you can do remote work on Upwork or something, or even teach English online, like my friend does, you know, she makes $20 an hour teaching kids, you know, English to Chinese kids. You know, and they're in China, they're rich, and I don't know rich, but I'm sure they're more well-off Chinese kids. And like, right. She makes $80 a day, 4 hours a day, you know, and to me, and I mean, obviously me and you, $20 an hour, not, but for her, what she's doing, she's younger, you know, 27 or something. And like, it's an incredible, you couldn't do that in the States. You couldn't do that in the States unless you were well off, or you know, and people frown down upon, like, if you, what are you doing? You know, the whole hustle culture of work, and people frown down upon like doing side stuff, you know? I mean, if I tell people when I was a musician, and I'm a realist about that. Like, I understand that it's very difficult, and only a few people are able to really make money in music, but I'm going to do it because it's my passion. It's what I love. I love helping people create their dreams and their goals. And a lot of artists and musicians really need help. And so I love doing that. And I'm only going to work on projects that I love. I made that decision a long time ago because I fall in love with so many projects. Like, why take projects that aren't love, right? And so it's really important to me that if I do need to focus for 2 months on someone's project and not create income, that I can do that, that I have the space and headspace to do that. And this place gives that to you, you know, it really does. And then, you know, and it doesn't even need to be Playa to me is close enough to the States that I can go visit my mom, or right. you know, hop over in a couple hours. It's, you know, just, you know, flights from Cancun to LA are $150, you know, it's like, you know, if you search around, you know what I mean? And so for me, it just checks so many boxes here.
Right. Yeah. And of course, if you're listening to us and you do any business in the States or in Canada, in this time zone, Mexico in general is a really good place to be. It's not as expensive as being in the States or Canada, and you still enjoy a lot of the same, perks, like you know, Playa del Carmen, though, I would say it's not super, how do I say this? Like authentic Mexico, because it's very expat heavy. And you have to find, you know, the central or the downtown area is very focused towards tourism. So I would say if you're looking for a real like experience of the Mexican culture, being downtown might not be the best place for you. However, if you want like a softer integration into the Mexican culture, and if you used to live in the States or in Canada, places like Playa del Carmen, Cabo, if you like to surf, you can go to Sayulita. So these places are great inns, and they're in the same time zone. So, you know, you don't have to make a big jump and be worried if there's internet or water, you know, in this place. You can definitely start somewhere. And that's also one of the things that I love being here, because we still have a lot of our, I would say, like American comforts. And because of that, the transition was pretty easy. And it made me also not have to struggle in adjusting so much. And then because of the things that you mentioned that improved my quality of life, the housekeeper, the masseuse, my healer that, you know, that I work with, all of these things are so common in Playa del Carmen. And it definitely gave me the space to work on my business, work on myself, get healthier, and basically be the best leader, business person, sister, right, that I can be. And it, you know, it improved my life overall. And that's how big the effect of an environment is really to someone. And that's why, you know, if you have an opportunity to pursue another environment that you feel will help you in different parts of your life, definitely take the chance, or, you know, take the plunge. So for you, Max, how has living here, you know, talk about business for a bit, how has living in Playa del Carmen impacted you and your business, aside from just like giving you space to decide on the best thing to do next?
So actually, I think you touched on it a little bit. I was going to comment on what you just said, and it is actually a good segue, because it I think they're both very much aligned. Is that when we're in a space that we grew up in, it doesn't matter if you have a wonderful upbringing or more of a challenged upbringing like I did. Like it's when you leave a place and you go there, like you're away from all the systems and patterns that we fall into. I know my family, God bless them. I just, you know, I couldn't, you know, I don't think I would be able to, but they're just not very supportive, you know, in general. And they're kind of negative overall, my family. You know, we had some trauma and some, you know, past history of like alcoholism in my family and drug addiction. And it's like, I was able to get out and break that cycle. You know, and there's just people around where there's just kind of wallowing in their misery. Even if they're not really working on themselves. And so if you find, I was in a situation where I find that, so it was very hard for me to do business in that environment. So I, you know, because really what you want to do is like, hey, you have ideas, you want to talk about them, you want to share them. And the next thing you know, and maybe even it's subtle or not so subtle, people don't really want you to change. So if you're near, and it's not even that negative, it's not even a negative thing that they don't want you to change. It's like people, you know, there's not their job and earth to be my cheerleader, you know, but I get that. But what it is that we have as individuals have to take responsibility for ourselves. And if you're doing business specifically, which takes so much focus and concentration for someone like me, to be able to separate myself from to separate myself from the people who systemized their misery, you know, was such a powerful move for me. So coming here and working on business was such a, you know, I guess the hardest part coming here, actually this is very difficult in such a positive way, is that when I got here, I didn't want to do any work. It's such a beautiful, the vibe is so much slower. So I basically thought I was going to, what's that?
So many people to meet, so many new people.
Yeah, and the beach, and it's your life slower. If you're from the States, I mean, you can tell when people just get off the plane here. I mean, they're walking like, you know, 20 miles an hour, like they are, you know, you can tell the New Yorkers when they land here, like they just like, you know, all the whole, and like the pace is just so much slower. I probably spent the first 3 or 4 months here just like chilling. I thought I was going to do all this work. I had all these plans. I was going to, you know, work on this music and do all this stuff. And it really, that 4 months, that break that I took, was probably the best thing I ever did in my life. Because what it does, because what it did, what it really did teach me, and I think I've touched on earlier, was you need to gather space to find out who you really are. I was able, this place gives you that. And it's really active in that community that people are, unlike where I'm from, which is San Francisco Bay Area, which is like hustle culture. You know, a lot, everyone just talked about work all the time. What I came here was, it gave me that space to really kind of process how I work. You know, I was able to get some, you know, I was able to, you know, meet people who were working on themselves and doing the same things, all those kind of things. So in a roundabout way, with what your question is, like, how does this affect for business? Because I was able to take that time away from it, and because this place gave it to me, I was actually able to really kind of go into business with intention.
Right.
And so, you know, and so this place is great for that. Because I can go to, I have an office at a co-working space here, a private office, and it's a great place. And there's a community there, and you know, you go there, and I have strict, I work 5 hours a day. That's it. I'm really like a big fan of deep work and things like that. And just try to present, you know, just trying to do the highest quality of work in the smallest amount of time. And then make sure that my work is intentional. And that here, that's a great place, because I'm not trying to offset negative intentions or negative people in my life. And, you know, and I think even positive people in my life, they just don't want you to change. So if you're in an area where people don't want you to change because it makes them feel uncomfortable trying to adapt to you, not that they don't want you to be successful, which a lot of people don't actually. And when it really comes down to it, and only because you're changing, they don't care if you're a millionaire or not a millionaire, but they're definitely not going to support you, as we think, you know, we have that kind of dream with people. So to me, that was like a big part of it. I know, right. I rambled a bit there, but that, to me, being able to hear and like have space, and then from that point I can cultivate intention, was pretty cool. And that sounds really like a lot of buzzwords, but I do mean it, you know, like that. So
No, I love it. There was a quote where I remember this quote based on, as I was listening to you, when people ask you or tell you that, oh my God, you have changed, you should tell them, well, thank you. I didn't work this hard to remain the same.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But people, and like, you would wish that you've changed.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but the thing is, the truth is, when it comes to people, we can't really say that to people, even if we love them, our best friends or people, like if anybody has the gall to say you've changed, you know, the thing about, I remember I heard this line, and this really helped me actually, right, when I moved here. Funny you say that. It was a line that's like, well, wait a minute. If they're asking why you changed, why aren't they asking you if you're happy? You know, when people, you know, when people see you happy and joyous, and they don't say, oh, that's great, why, you know, I'm so glad you're happy. They say, why have you changed? So what happens was, I really started really kind of listening to people and really, you know, thinking of, and like thinking about what their intentions and motivations were, and that, not necessarily what they wanted from me, just like where they were coming from, because you could tell by the way people respond to you and if in your actions, how much they are uncomfortable with change with you. You know, people, our brains, the human brain needs to compartmentalize everything, right? We just do so we can process things, because there's so much information coming at us at all times.
Right.
So having someone so important as a relationship, especially a close relationship, pivot on you is really uncomfortable for anybody. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's like, say you have a partner, right? I do too. If for some reason they're not in a good mood, or we, they're not happy, like we, it takes a little bit of concentration for us to be able to adjust to that and to adapt to them. But people, you know, to throw that at other people, you know, it's like, you know, we're like bulls in a china shop, I think, sometimes. And so I have a lot of compassion for that. But at the same time, I don't necessarily want to deal with it, because I want to grow. And I'm such a people person, and I'm so adaptable to other people. If they're, you know, if they're not supporting me, I will just let it slide. And I did that for many years, and I wasn't able to kind of burst through my own barriers because of the people I was around.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So. That's it. Yeah. You know what? Usually the people who love you, they're going to come around and they're going to tell you like, hey, actually, you know, I was wrong. Or I actually see where you're moving towards or what you're running towards, and I support that. I've had, I would say, ex-boyfriends before who viewed my change or how I changed like negatively at first. And then they would actually, I would get a message from them like years and years after, and saying that, hey, like, I'm proud of who you are. I'm proud of who you are. You really went after your dream. You know, you're the crazy one. You've always been the crazy one, but it has always worked out. And I feel like an environment like, you know, Playa del Carmen and wherever a similar environment.
We are the crazy ones, right?
We are the crazy ones.
Yeah.
And wherever a similar environment is located in any parts of the world, I think Chiang Mai, a lot of people are talking about Chiang Mai. It's also pretty nice for that. I believe there's places in the Philippines that are also really good for these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And I think that approaching an environment like this and really being intentional, like you said, is only going to be beneficial for you. What are your tips towards, I would say, mustering up the courage to take the plunge and leaving your hometown or leaving the environment that you're in? What are your tips for basically most people who are stuck and believe that there's no alternate reality?
You know, I like, it's like, so for me, I mean, my situation, I think is interesting. Like I've always kind of thought a little bit outside of the box. Like I look at that before. I used to look at that as something negative, right? They call it, you know, some people call it like shiny object syndrome, but you know, and a lot of us would like, that's, and if you think about that, that's like shame speak, right? That's verbiage that is for shaming, right? But the truth is that I'm not able to, I learned a lot about myself. And so what it is, I'm not, I'll just kind of give you an example this will get to your answer, is that what I learned was that it's not that there's a shiny object syndrome, is that because my talent is ideas, like I'm a visionary, and that's like my personality type, is that I'm not, and visionaries are not able to prioritize their ideas. Every idea is the best idea they ever had. And that is what is able for them to drive things forward. So the fact that, so what it did, and so how I was able to move out, was that I really had to do the inner work first. I had to really kind of realize who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like, you know, there's a, you know, we could be dramatic and call it like, you have to be like, a, you know, recreate yourself and do all that, but you don't necessarily need to do that. You just have to like feel, I think for me, it's just like feel, you know, feeling like what my truth is and like what is accurate to me. Like, what are my reactions? Being very conscious of my speech. Like I use very deliberate words and things like that. And once you start really being aware of how you act and react to certain situations, and then you get closer to like your truth, like meaning like, okay, truth is I'm a sensitive person. And so it doesn't mean, but what doesn't mean that other people need to tolerate that sensitivity. It means that I need to be careful about the people I'm around, because some people are so bright and so loud that they, you know, they, it's too much for me in certain times. So I have to pace myself. So I can't, so it's my own expectations of what I need have to be tempered. Right. Because so what it was like really taking personal responsibility for myself, and my own happiness and my own well-being. And from there, it just grew from that. You know, I was in a relationship that I don't think was positive to growth. You know, and because of my own expectations from that, like my own childhood or my own, you know, we read a lot of stories, we watch a lot of movies, we think how relationships are, I don't know, maybe blue pill, people would call it, right? and so I was very like, you know, very that way, and I was basically trying to just try to fit in, you know what I mean, just try to kind of navigate this in it, but it never felt comfortable. And so for me to be able to change my life entirely and basically redesign my life, but still be who I am, just took a lot of inner work. It just really did. You know, therapy, I'm in recovery, which has been so helpful to me in my life. You know, I stopped using drugs and drinking, and that's such a powerful part of my story.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you. Yeah. You know, I was a single dad, you know, there was no mom in the picture. It was just him and me. And so raising a kid and having him become an adult and independent was such a validating thing for life in my space. So it's like, you know, you have to do what you do for your responsibilities, of course. But at the same time, luckily enough, I was able to have the space and the wherewithal to be able to teach him something different. So I kind of broke the chain of the matrix, so to speak. Right.
I love that.
So he's independent and he's like a, you know, self-sufficient, and he's on his own. He's, you know, he loves his life and his career, and he gets uncomfortable for times, but he, you know, we talk all the time, and but all these kind of things is like, I just kept taking, I think the biggest thing that probably helped me is that when in doubt, just do the next right step. I just do the next right step. That's it. Yeah. I don't have to have it all figured out. Just like when I'm not sure, I don't have to really, and I, you know, there's a few things, like I'm a big person on little one lines or whatever, stoic wisdom, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, what's the next right step? Like if I'm not sure of something. And the other thing is I don't always have to have opinion on everything. So if somebody makes me mad or I don't like what they're doing or I get resentful for some reason, I don't have to have an opinion. Right. And I could use that energy working on myself instead of trying to figure out why other people are doing what they're doing. So, you know, those kind of things, just maturity, growing up. And then, you know, it's a long winded form and I hope you edit it down, you know, but it's you know, to answer your question, you know, people don't have the courage. Like you don't have to have the courage right now. Just figure out who you just, you don't have to figure out who you are either. Just start listening to yourself. And then the more you listen to yourself, you'll, the more the same things will be repeated over and over. And those are kind of who you, and then you actually figure out who you are. It's really not rocket science, but it does take some intention.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I learned also from what you've shared is that some people minimize what these small things can do to your life. Like when you said that if you are faced with a big decision and you don't know what to do, it's such a big decision. Just do the smallest, do the next right step. I really like that.
Yeah.
I really like that advice because it dilutes being intimidated by a big decision, right? Like instead of deciding, should I propose to her or not? Why don't you ask yourself if you actually love spending time with this person every day? You know, if and if that makes sense, then you can move on to the next step or something like that. Yeah. Or if you're thinking of leaving your hometown, ask yourself, how do you feel every time you come home? Does it still feel like home to you? You know, do you feel rest? Do you feel rested? Or do you just feel like it's just a place to sleep? Like, you know, these nuances, like it's important to take a breather and think about that.
Yeah. Or even go, absolutely. And even go even deeper. Like, so if, instead of maybe like, I'm sure there's people listening. It's going like, I want to get out of this town forever. Ask yourself, why do you want to get out of this town? Like what is uncomfortable about it? And it could be something so obvious, like trauma and you know, it's like toxic, you know, like relationships or whatever, but those are not going to go away. And I found that out early on. Like, we would recreate those relationships anyway later on. And so for me, what I found out was I just didn't want to keep repeating the same things over and over again. And so I just had to slow down as far as my decision-making process and like things like that. And what that does is it opens yourself up to it by not plowing through your life. It opens up for new experiences and learning, you know, learning opportunities. And so, you know, you're absolutely right. And so the next right thing is, because when you start making a decision about things, about your life, of like, okay, well, you know what, I'm kind of done with, you don't have to have an answer. You can just say, I'm kind of done with this. Well, it's so we want to take control. So we want, that's our brain wants to control everything. So our brain, so what happens is like, I know I've done this a couple times in the past where I just like quit a job out of the blue. Cause I didn't feel comfortable there. I didn't know actually if I would just, I don't like not knowing. And so when I was younger, I would never work through these problems. Right. I would never work through, you know, consistency of learning, you know, of the, how to put this, like I didn't work through like delayed gratification and I still have lots of problems with that. And so what I did was like, okay, well, I tried it. Okay. Let me work through, let me see if I can just, let me, you know, just give it a day. That was the next right thing for me. You know, let me just come back tomorrow on this. And, you know, I would feel a lot better. So when I'm not sure of a decision, I just ask myself like, what's the next right thing? You know, I tell you what, because your conscience is going to tell you the next right thing and you can take it or leave it. And I've definitely left it before, but it will tell you, hey, you know, why don't you just go take a breather, go take a walk, you know, take a five, you know, or if I'm having a really intense conversation with my fiance, just like, you know, where is she coming from? You know, what's the next right thing here? Or what's the, this, and it's just, anyway, I'm kind of rambling on that. It was a lot of gratitude for that. Yeah. I love talking about this stuff, as you can tell.
Yeah, no, I there's actually one good thing there that we should highlight also about Playa. So for those who don't know, Playa del Carmen is a very, very walkable town. I haven't had a car in 2 years, and the town is just like arranged like that. We walk everywhere. The walk could be 4 minutes or 40 minutes. We actually don't feel it because of how the city is designed. And so things and expressions like go for a walk or take a walk, it is actually super easy to do here. And it's one of the things. You know, I read in this book, very good book, by the way, for entrepreneurs who are looking to improve leadership in their companies. This book, Radical Candor, written by Kim Scott. She had an advice there that if you have an issue in your business of two people fighting or two people kind of being in a disagreement, instead of getting them on a table and talking to them to hash things out, you guys should go for a walk. Because going for a walk, subconsciously tells your brain that you're all moving in the same direction, and it tells your like subliminally to work on the issue together. And I really like that. And you know, my partner and I practice that too. We go for walks. Sometimes we say, oh, let's go to this area to explore restaurants there. But as you go through this walk, you're like talking. So we're talking about life, about our future plans. And, you know, and if you have these things just easily accessible in your city, God, I can't imagine just doing this like anywhere, like in Manila, Philippines, or in the States. You know, it's unless you live in a super gated community where it's really, really safe.
Totally.
You can't just go for a walk.
No.
Especially as a girl.
Oakland. I'm from Oakland. So yeah, no, you don't. No, there's... No, you don't walk in Oakland. That's a really valid point. Like what you brought up was like, you do that with your partner, and like walking here is very true. Like I walk, I actually practice part of my, it's like part of my spiritual practice. So I basically spend about 2 hours in the morning. That's the reason why I wake up every so early, basically being with nature and walking. So that what that does, that's why I'm able to work, you know, 4 to 5 hours a day, is because I have that ability to basically align myself with the work that I'm doing, the meaningful work. And so that, you know, you brought up a very valid point, which was that you two were just walking and now you're talking. So what that does, if you're walking and talking, and this is what I found out with my son who has some bipolar stuff, and how we would deal with that when he was being manic, was that we would just go on walks. And what I found out, this is actually from group therapy with other people, other parents who have children that are bipolar, is that what happens is it when you walk with somebody, say you're having a, it negates the fight or flight part of us.
So what
it does is such a great way to have conversations. And my fiance, I definitely absolutely utilize that, because two people walking on the beach, just chatting about life, they're not going to go at each other's throat. You know, very rare do divorces happen in that moment, you know, like it's, but if you sit down to them at a table and you see, you know, Carla, I need to talk to you. The thing is, what happens is it goes into that fight or flight, because it has to do with tribal, you know, are you being kicked out of the tribe? Are you being kicked out? You know, so it's like very primal part of our brains that, so when you're confronting somebody, so it's such a powerful tool to just, you know, get outside, go on walks, you know, have side-by-side conversations, right? Or even if they're walking backwards talking to you, no one's going to, you know, they're not threatening. I'm like, you know, you're walking forward and I'm facing you, but I'm walking backwards on a beach, you know?
Yeah.
Hard to, you know, let's go for a swim. Let's jump in the water. No one's, you know, it's just so many ways to change up, you know, scroll stop, you know, of life, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know? So,
Yeah. And then you were so close to nature. Like there's so many, you can see the stars at night. You know what I mean? Like the other day, I think I saw like, I was at the golf course and I saw both the moon and the sun at the same time. And I was just like, wow, this is like so beautiful. And like, as you said, whether it's conflict management or just a romantic date with your partner, a walk, it just makes the experience richer if you live in a place like Playa del Carmen. Okay, so now we're done with the rainbows and butterflies. We're going to get real with you guys here. We're not going to lie to you. There are some cons about living here. Can you think of some, or do you want me to start, Max?
Oh, I mean, I could think of tons. So, I mean, you're probably going to come up with some of the few. So there's my fiance Rosina, she's lived here for 7 years. And so there's a culture. So there's like a, I want to be careful how to say this, because I'm not from this area. I'm blessed enough where I, you know, was accepted here, you know, in this community. But there's a culture of like, if you like, she calls it like a Mayan culture here. It goes back many, many years. And what it is if you leave something outside, it's gone. It's like the universe has made it theirs. So you can't, so there's a lot of theft and there's a lot of burglaries here. It's not violent crime. It's crimes of opportunity. And so, you know, you just don't want to leave your bike out or something out. I mean, it will get, you know, like if you have a nice bike, we literally found like right outside my house, my old house, we like, part of the reason why we moved here is like, because there was a guy just on the street during the day, he was like with a hacksaw, just cutting through the lock of a bicycle. And the, and people, you know, so if you leave it out, that's definitely an issue, you know, we should go back and forth. So I could go on this whole podcast to talk about, and it's not necessarily negative. It's just cultural difference. I don't see it because those people aren't necessarily criminals. Like they probably go home and hey, they give their kid a new bike. You know what I mean? It's just, I mean, maybe I'm being super generous with that statement, but you know, for me, I don't think it's their, it's, I'm a visitor. I'm a guest here. So I have to kind of abide by the rules.
Yeah.
And so for me, I don't look at it necessarily as a negative thing, but I sure as hell ain't going to leave my bicycle, a $2,000 bike, bicycle on the street. You know, I'm going to take that in. And if you do that, you're fine. But if you leave it out, you're asking for it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I think I heard about that principle too, with like found phones and wallets, like they will rarely return it or something. And maybe it's like, obviously there's going to be people with ill intentions, but maybe it's also related to that principle. Like if you found it, it's yours. The universe has given it to you or something that. Okay. For me, for sure. And this is also apparent in the Philippine culture. So I'm not ashamed of sharing it, but people are really loose with time. So they call it, like, this is actually very common in like Spanish, kind of Spanish influenced cultures. Because if you actually look at the Spanish language, there are a lot of words that are related to procrastination. Mm-hmm. In the Philippines, we have what we call the mañana habit. This is so common. My mom would yell at me for procrastinating. Mañana habit. Do it tomorrow. Do it later. Yeah. And then there's siesta, right? Like sleeping in the afternoon. You know, so and there's a term, it's a Spanish term called, I think, sobremesa, which is the time that you spend after eating and just talking. And just taking your time. So these things are apparent, like Spanish cultures, obviously here in Mexico as well, Philippines. And it's all because of, it's the other side of that pro or that advantage that we talked about earlier, which is taking time for yourself, right? Taking time for yourself and taking up space, you know, for yourself, putting yourself first. So this is kind of the other side of that, where people are just loose with time. And so as an expat, I always ask, you know, what time is the thing? And they're like 7 p.m. And then I always say jokingly, is that Mexican time or Swiss time or something like that?
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I've had people who had to repair, say, my AC or come here for something and they say 3 p.m. and they're not here until 5 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they're like super on time and they're super like, boom, 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 boom. You know, like, okay. We had the gas guy come and they came at like, they said, we'll be there 7:30 in the morning. And they were here at 7:30 in the morning. So it's really surprising when people are on time here. I totally agree with that. It's kind of hilarious, actually.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm a guest in this country. So the way I look at it and then the way I kind of accept things like this is that like, it's, you know, I just let it go. You know, it's just part of living here and like doing that. And believe me, it was very frustrating at first, you know, for me to, and then I also don't do any, I like, you just, and this is probably goes into another point is that with the cons here is that, this country, as beautiful as there are, the people are, there are some systems here in place that are definitely like detrimental to people's growth and business, you know, like the locals, they really have very few opportunities here. Like it's most of the money is controlled by a few hundred families here. I mean, that's my assumption. I don't know this for sure, but you know, it's like, it's not like the US where freedom kind of, you know, the opportunity is there. And so here it's like people, I mean, I can understand why they kind of feel that way. You know what I mean? Because, you know, the way they go is like the same person who will like, you know, they who like quote unquote found a bicycle, you know, just kind of based. This morning I rode a bike. I was riding my bike at like 6:30 in the morning and there's these trucks going by and they go by the streets and they basically pick up stranger day workers, no papers, no nothing. They get cash at the end of the day. And these people just climb in the back of the truck. Hey, we need a worker. And if they're all of these people are all aligned at this part, it's not in the central because I live behind that a little bit. And so I was walking, going around the outside and it was really interesting. And so those people will go and then they'll, if they don't feel like working, they don't just don't work that day. They just won't show up. You know, there's no job. There's like a lot of the jobs here that aren't, you know, are like that. They're just kind of like very seasonal day labor, that kind of situations, you know? And so, you know, they show up if they want to go to work, they show up. If they don't, the car just keeps moving, you know? So interesting. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely part of a culture of developing countries where money now and food now is more important than anything else. Like there's no regard for like an actual career or but I'm not saying there's no systematic obviously injustices or unfairness, right, in the situation, but I think that kind of instability or, you know, expectations for having a job, not having a job is really, really common in developing countries.
They don't have opportunities. And this is my own personal view. I don't have any. My witnessing is that I really think that if you're like, you can't grow anything here. If you can't do business in Mexico, it's impossible. It really is. It's so corrupt. And the people who control it are people for our families and the people who are, you know, there's politics here. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's like, you know, I mean, it's a great place. It's a great place to be, but I would never become a natural citizen here and like try to do like, you know, start a web development company or something because the most you're going to make is 30 to 50K a year. And that's like a very successful company here. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people own, you know, they start like, they'll do like a cell phone, you know, they start businesses that they can do like taco stands or a laundromat, you know, but, or like maybe they'll do like a little cell phone business, but there's no way someone's here without really like playing politics and having being like in the know, they're not going to be able to start like a restaurant that can become a chain unless they, you know, maybe three stores or four stores, but once they grow on that, you know, there's
very rare. Yeah. It's
they can't, they're not rare. Because there's people that are going to take them down. They're going to want a bite of that, you know, that pie, they're going to want to do that. So it's just like, it's very difficult. And I have to tell you one thing that this place really did. And I'm one of those weirdos who loves the United States. Like I really do. I love it. I just don't understand the politics of it right now and the people there. I don't understand why they're focusing on the things they're focusing on. And so here, the things that people focus on real things and real life problems here. And to me, that is much more appealing than, you know, something that is not, to me, that is not necessarily valid to the growth of people in general, right? So here are these, you know, people ask questions about things that are important to them, not important to a tribe or a culture. You know what I mean? So anyway, I know that was kind of a roundabout way of saying like, I like both and I like going to the United States and coming here, but here for the people there for the freedoms and everything that the place offers. Yeah. So amazing. You know, is amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the barriers to entry in business is definitely difficult here, especially for a local. I could just imagine, you know, the going against these oligarchs, the capitalization that you need, the manpower that you need, the systems in place, mm-hmm. it's going to be difficult. However, I would say it's also a great time for a lot of entrepreneurs in Mexico or entrepreneurial people who to explore opportunities online, like because they're in the same time zone as US and Canada, increases their propensity to make more money while still staying in a place that they are comfortable in, they grew up in, and you know they can navigate. So, and if they live in a place like Playa del Carmen, for example, where there's entrepreneurs in all walks of life from different parts of the world, then they will have the right influence around them. And I think there's definitely a lot of opportunity in there. That is the other side of the con or the disadvantage of physical barriers to entry for starting a business here.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And I think you're totally right. And I've thought that from ever since I came here, because these people, I mean, look, the young people specifically are very bright here. Like they're very on top of stuff. And like, they're very, as a culture, they cultivate like ideas and things, and that's so important. But it's so interesting. But then, you know, I often ask that, like, well, why don't you just work online or do something? I mean, you have these, and you know, it's just, I think it's really, like we talked about earlier in the podcast, where it's a cultural thing, where the people, their families and those other people, they kind of frown down upon that. You know, they kind of, you know, it's like people, you know, it's like the, I don't know if you heard the story, like the lobsters in the bucket, right? So like,
yeah.
You know, they, you know, so the only way to keep a lobster in a bucket is throw another lobster in there, you know? And so like, because it'll pull it down every time it tries to climb out. And I really do see that here. You know, people, he runs a record label here. Really good guy. But he came to me to help him do some things here. And because he said, because I'm, people look at me different because I'm from America, and they'll give me more opportunities because they'll, you know, and it's so true. There's a caste system. And I think that's a natural way of human behavior is, in a way. There's like a caste system that we have to, and that's a reason why I live here. And I love hanging out with you guys and other entrepreneurs and independent entrepreneurs, because pretty much everyone who does that has broken out of that caste system. You know, is that how you pronounce it? Caste, right? Yeah. So like, so, you know, here it is like, I don't know. I really don't know any of these people that are really kind of taking advantage of the opportunities they have. I'm sure there are, you know, but some people work, you know, but they're not really like you. If you can go online right now, get Google. These people speak great English because it's taught in schools and like, you know, and so the people I mean talking about, and like, they could just go to Google, get certified in a week for digital marketing, and they would make $75,000 a year. And I know that's easy for me to say, and I'm just drawing a straight line to something that obviously is a lot more complex. But you know, I talked to this one girl, and she runs Airbnb. She kind of helps somebody go with some Airbnbs and stuff. She's brilliant. And I was like, well, why don't you, you know, do some consulting and stuff? And she's making like $5 an hour doing it here or something, you know, $4 an hour. And it just wasn't, she couldn't wrap her head around it, I think, or whatever, you know, I mean, and that's part of her family. You know, they always come up with problem, you know, reasons why, you can't do it. And I get it. I come from that as well, you know, and it takes, again, you have to, it's not easy just by having the answer and world and life just isn't, it's that, that's also, if knowing the answer and not doing it actually probably makes it harder. You know what I mean? It's like, so some people just don't want to know the answer, you know, or they don't want to, or there's lots of reasons, there's family reasons. And you know, a lot of people live with their families here, you know? And so imagine telling your mom who comes from, you know, and grandma and your brothers and sisters and, you know, coming from a family that is like been workers their whole lives, that you're going to go get go work for Carla, you know, online business, like, you know, she's going to run an e-commerce store. They're gonna be like, what are you doing that for? We need you to get out and make $300 a month working at OXXO. You know, what are you doing? You know,
and it's not real money.
That's not real money. Once your friends work there, you should go work there too. Look at Julie. She's a great girl. You know, go work with her. She makes $300 a month. And like, I mean, that's how I've seen that over and over again here. So there is definitely a culture and a con here.
Yeah.
You know, for that.
You know, in developing countries, success is a certain way. It is working in an air conditioned room in a collar.
Yeah,
right. Which is funny because like in the States, for example, a really cool job is obviously like there's one part where you know you're in a suit, you're in Wall Street and have a nice car, nice watch. But in where you grow up, basically Bay Area, San Francisco, the cool thing is to be a tech entrepreneur in his hoodies and surfs on the weekend.
Yeah.
Right. So something like that. Yep. So however, in developing countries like the Philippines, Mexico, we have a certain, you know, way of thinking. So one example for this is really funny. So in provinces in the Philippines, mothers would rather convince their kid to be a sales lady at the mall, basically, you know, and it pays $300 a month, than be a housekeeper for a rich family where they could be making $500 to $1,000 a month, just because a sales girl, sales lady at the mall is a more honorable, quote unquote, job in their heads compared to like a housekeeper or a nanny.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I mean, status, right? It's all status. And
status, yes.
I mean, I could see that. I mean, maybe when their parents were young in the 50s and 60s or 70s, like the malls just opened up and it was kind of a big deal. And they would have parties, you know, they would have like grand openings and all these kind of things. And so the way, you know, again, that's just weight, that these are just like belief systems that are in place. And
totally.
And I reckon the one thing about being like learning about yourself and doing, you start to see what all these belief systems really are. And just for a point of clarity, and this is just an observation, is that, you know, we use the term emerging, right? Countries or whatever, but I'm going to go out on a limb and just say it really like these, it's the really is that the systems themselves are corrupt. They're basically based on, you know, based on keeping the rich rich and the poor poor and the inner balance. That's why it's a system. It's not necessarily that the families want that to happen or the government wants that to happen. It's just that because the system is in place to protect those already having money. And so, you know, it's impossible. So, you know, I come from a place, the US, where it's like anything is possible. Like if you work hard, even if you don't even speak English, you can learn English, work hard and become very successful in one generation. And here, I just don't see that being impossible for anybody. You know, I really don't. Thailand, I don't see it. I don't see it I didn't go to the Philippines, but Vietnam, any of these countries, we're just so blessed. And you can see why everybody wants to get over to the States, right?
Yeah.
And here it's like, it's just, the system is corrupt. It's just, so that is, that's sometimes, I did a benefit here and, you know, people can't even afford to like, I threw a benefit for the shelter here for like with a bunch of DJs and the DJs came and played, and it made some money here, but people can't afford to really even help or donate. They'll donate time. There's just nothing there for them to do. So they all had a good time, but we didn't raise very much money for the shelter, but it was very successful in other ways. But you could tell, like, I mean, people, these comes, they, you know, I go to the store here and meat, like red meat is like the same price as it is in the States. So it's like $7 a pound or something, $8 a pound. These people make $500 a month. How in the hell are they going to afford a steak? You know?
Right,
and it's like, and there's no way, there's no job for them. Even if they go to university. You know, I put an ad out. I work with people here. I hire here. Well, that's not true. That's not accurate. So there was a project I was involved in, and they were hiring, and we got so many people, the college graduates, willing to work for $600-$700 a month here.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's and because there's no opportunities for them. So anyway, I don't want to harp on it more.
Yeah.
Like that. You know what I mean? Sorry.
No worries.
I'm very passionate about
you know, one other thing going back to our topic on, you know, why we love living here, it just opens up your eyes to different things, different realities. And because of the diversity of people, it also is, you know, it also exposes you to a wider worldview. And I think the other bonus here, obviously, we didn't talk about it. You and I are English speakers. I speak Filipino. But you get to learn a new language. You're forced to learn Spanish.
Yep.
So you get to exercise some neuroplasticity, you know, things here. Even in your 30s, like I learned Spanish. I started learning Spanish when I moved here. I was 31. And so that was kind of tough. But, you know, my Spanish level right now is enough for me to at least not get lost when I go home or order the right thing in the menu.
Yeah.
How's your Spanish, Max?
So I'm learning it now. That's a great question. So I'm actually going to this week. So this is really interesting. So like I'm going to this weekend. I just found out from one of the people in our group, Jordan, and he turned me on to this guy, Phil, who does these immersion weekends. And so it's happening next weekend. So I'm going to do an immersion weekend. I just know it. I'm not conversational at all, but I can go order in restaurants. I can say, you know, talk to people for a minute. I can understand about 20% of what I hear.
Right.
But it's interesting. Like you said that, because how much would a immersion language course cost in the States? Maybe $1,000 for a weekend, maybe $1,500 bucks, you know, it's $400 meals provided, you know, 3 days of total Spanish immersion.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I mean, you could do anything. You can learn a language here. You can learn how to scuba dive. You can do, you know, it's so.
And like, everything. You can learn everything under $300. Let's go with that.
Yeah, basically. That's right.
Seriously. You can kite surf. You can. Oh my gosh. I actually went to like a hip hop dance thing. I booked a free diving class that we didn't end up doing.
Yeah.
Like 400 pesos. How much is that? 20 bucks an hour?
Yeah, 20 bucks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't even get people. You know, you go in and get your car checked, it's $250 in the States to check your check engine light. You know what I mean? It's like, and they're not doing anything. They're literally not doing anything. They're checking a light. That's it. They're plugging something in and they don't even read it. Like they print it out and hand it to you. You know what I mean? Right. It's like, you know, so it's like here, you know.
Doctors. You know, doctors, healers, you know, hair stuff. Like, oh my God, everything that every time I go into a salon in the States, it's at least $300.
Oh yeah. Oh, they see your hair. They're like, okay, this one, cha-ching, they got you, you know.
Here, it's probably, I don't know, a new pair of boobs or something.
It's hard here. Unless you're buying stuff like an iPhone or something expensive, which I do, that's, you know, I do like having good tech. But other than that, it's super hard to spend $300 here. Like it's almost impossible. Unless you're buying, you know, something like, you know, something that is like premium, right?
Yeah.
But there, it's like, it just goes away. So, I mean, I think when I first got here, if you're for your viewers, you could probably live here pretty comfortably for about $1,600 a month. If you get a decent, cheap, you don't live too much and you don't have the extras. You just have a one bedroom apartment, you know, $1,500 is mine. If you could do $2,500 a month, like you can live really well. If you could do $3,500 a month, you're basically top 1%. If you could do $5,000, you're living like a king and queen.
Yeah, absolutely. You're at that budget. You're probably renting a yacht every month and going out to parties.
Going on excursions, eating out every night.
Yeah.
You know, eating out every night, you know, all the parties you can think of and buying drinks for everybody when you go out and dinners and stuff like this. For my birthday was last week. And I bought dinner for everybody there and it cost me like $200. It was like, you know,
Cool is
that? And so you missed, you missed out on a free dinner.
I know.
And
maybe next Monday.
No, it was last minute. I know it was last minute. But that's it. You could do that here. And I love that. I mean, I love that lifestyle in the States to buy dinner in San Francisco. Mind you, the only restaurants open are the ones that, the minimum spend is $100, you know, that these places left, you know.
Yeah.
And so if you're sitting down with wine, it's $1,000 for four people for dinner.
Yeah, I have a friend. He's a guy and he's single and he lives in New York. And he was like, you know, I love meeting people through the apps and all that. But for me to buy them a drink, they have to be spectacular because a drink is like
18
20 bucks and I have to Uber and all that. So it's just funny. Yeah. So, okay. So as we're going to our, you know, the ending of this podcast, thank you so much, Max, for your time. Yeah. I'm going to do a very quick run through of 10 things in Playa del Carmen and just give me a rating, no explanation, from 1 to 10. Is that okay?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, this is a surprise. Cool.
Don't worry. It's all PG.
Oh, shoot.
Oof. All right, so let's start with number one, quality of food in restaurants.
In restaurants?
Mm-hmm.
Seven.
Seven, getting things done.
Six.
Transportation situation.
Well, walking is great. So I would say if you don't leave here, 9.
Mm-hmm.
My 2 feet and a bicycle. You can basically do anything with that.
Health and wellness services.
Depends. Health, 5. Wellness, 9.
I agree with that. Utilities and efficiency.
Utilities. What do you mean by that? The cost of gas?
Like electricity.
That's fine. So
internet.
People complain about it, but yeah, it's fine. No, it's cheap and it's basically like nothing compared to the States.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. I would say a 9.
9. Okay. Nature?
Oh, definitely a 10. Mind-blowing nature here. Jungle, cenotes, water. I mean, basically
everything
is here. Yeah.
Yeah. Starting a business.
Here, if you're spending pesos and making dollars, it's like a 9 because there's a support system here. I went, Chiang Mai is the only one I would put as a 10, but here's a 9. And Yeah, it's wonderful for that. You get fast internet, you can get cheap, you know, and people help you. Like if you need an assistant, you can get in here. You can do that kind of stuff or hire out. You can, you know, if you can't find them on Upwork, you can, or you want to work with someone locally, you can do that too.
Okay.
You know, laws permitting, I'm not a lawyer, so.
Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. Ease of immigration.
I'm going after my, I don't have my, what do you call it? My,
residency?
But I travel so much. So I just, it's basically every time I come back, it's like a visa run. So, but I know people that they just walk, you know, I think it's probably one of the easiest places to get residency and even permanent yep. residency, depending on your income. I just haven't gotten around to do it, but I think it's pretty easy. If okay. you're not, if you're from America, mind you, it's difficult if you're from another country. Rosina is from Uruguay and it took her 6 years to get hers. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah. The strength of your passport also.
Yeah. Strength of passport helps a lot in your bank account for sure.
For me as a Filipina, it was pretty easy if you have a business. So it was pretty easy for me. I would say 9 for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Weather.
I'd say 9 for me. Weather. I love the weather for 9 months of the year here, 8 months of the year.
Yeah.
I would say I love it for 6. I tolerate it for 3, but there's 3. There's no hell way in hell I'm going to be here.
That's
so,
true.
Yeah. So I would say all in all, just because it's so beautiful right now, especially this time of year, I'm going to still give it an 8.
8. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. And last but not the least, dating.
Yeah. How I dated a little bit. Look, I tell you, I dated a bit when I came here. It's extremely, how to put it, like, it's so interesting. So like, I personally like am attracted to like Latina women and local and people. And so for me, it was quite easy. There's a lot of people that come here, I think, to have a hard time because they're basically trying, you know, the expat communities, maybe 150 people here, and they're all kind of dating amongst themselves. So whatever, I don't get that. But for me, I found someone very fast, or actually she kind of found me and it worked out really well. And I'm ready. You know, for me, I can't stand the apps and stuff. I think it's like the race to the bottom with those things. And so for me, I think it's a great place if you can be authentic. And I think you'll have a lot of fun here.
I love that. You'll be
able to meet a lot of people. If you're looking for something that's just kind of going, you know, not really just distraction, you could do that too. But there's great people here. Why waste it? You know,
exactly.
Try to make real connections. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. 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 It's not ultimately a shit show like it is in the States. I'll tell you that. You
know? Yeah. So I think ultimately it is also like, you know, being real to your intentions and gravitating towards environments that bring you good people. So, and that's it. All right. So, well, thank you so much, Max, for sitting with us here. None of your business. I had so much fun. It's been a great conversation. For people who want to follow you, see what you're doing, where your next show is, please share where can we find you?
Yeah, email is great. Instagram's great. It's just Max Royale, MaxRoyale. Just Google that. And you can, if you want to email me at max@maxroyale, and you want to follow up or talk about anything I talked about today, or even just to chat, I'm totally open. I love meeting new people. So bring it on.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much. And to all our listeners, thank you for sitting with us here. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Feel free to leave us a comment or a rating and follow me on my Instagram, Facebook, and on YouTube. Thank you so much and see you next week for another episode of None of Your Business. Bye. So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have 2 conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.